Hello there. I'm Joe Burgoyne, host for Options Talk with OIC. You know, options can be a complex product, but we hope today's show will help take away some of the mystique about it. The Options Industry Council was created to educate investors and their financial advisors about the benefits and risks of exchange-traded equity options. We offer a variety of resources to those interested in learning more about options, including live seminars and webcasts. So here are a couple ways to stay in touch. You can like the OIC page on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at options_EDU, and join our group, OIC, on LinkedIn. I'm really looking forward to today's show as we're about to embark on a historical expedition detailing the birth and growth of the options industry. But before we get started, let me state that options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You should not enter into an options transaction until you have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. This brochure is available by visiting www.optionseducation.org or by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. To keep things simple, commissions, fees, margin interest, and taxes have not been included in the examples used in this podcast. These costs will impact the outcome of all stock and option transactions and must be considered prior to entering into any transactions. Consult your tax advisor about any potential tax consequences. None of the information presented in this podcast should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice. So let's introduce our guest for today's topic. We've got Phil Gocke, Managing Director at the Options Industry Council. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joe. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Phil, please tell our listeners a little bit about your experience in the options industry.
Joe, I've had multiple lives, as many of us in the industry have had. I was a central banker and a commercial banker, and then ran an options trading firm for 25 years. But for the last 5 years, I've been working on behalf of the Options Industry Council, directing research for the institutional client base primarily.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for being here. And from OIC's Investor Services Desk, we've got Joe Harwood. Now, Joe, what's your role over at the Investor Services Desk?
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here, and good to see you too, Phil. Investor Services, formerly called the call center or the help desk, and just to make things simpler, we went with one name, Investor Services. We answer questions from brokers, institutional investors, and of course the individual investor about options and their role and how they can be used, as well as what the risks are. It's a fantastic job. We've got a great team. We love it. We're dealing with options all day, every day.
Well, thank you both for being here. Now, before we hone in on the U.S. options market, please take me back to the days long ago when options were used. Phil?
Well, Joe, truth is, the first reference of options, you know, I think has been found way back with the Greeks. During the agricultural society that they obviously predominantly had, one of the issues that was necessary was to press olives that came from the olive harvest. And of course, when you have a harvest, you end up having a rush of individual farmers who need to get their harvest crushed. And there's a reference whereby one very smart man actually negotiated to have an option on one of these presses. And when the harvest came through to be very plentiful, he ended up being able to sell his option to have the first rights to press at a significant profit.
Very good.
And before my time, but still before my time, actually, the Dutch also used tulip options in Holland in the 1600s.
That was before your time.
That was before, just before.
All right. Well, so options have been around for hundreds of years. Interesting. Well, how about if we bring this conversation back to modern day finance and hone in on the history of the U.S. listed options industry? Who wants to start off with that?
Joe, I'd be happy to start. In 1973, the CBOE, full name was the Chicago Board Options Exchange, was the first U.S. exchange to trade listed options. The OCC came on shortly thereafter, but it was known then as the CBOE Clearing Corporation. Also, in 1973, Fisher Black and Myron Scholes prepared a research paper that outlined a model that would determine the fair market value of call options. In 1975, the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, approved options, the Options Clearing Corporation, and it continues to be the sole clearing agent for all U.S.-based equity options. In 1975, we also had the founding of the Philadelphia Stock Exchange, which is now part of NASDAQ OMX PHLX, and the American Stock Exchange, which has evolved to the NYSE Amex. And they both began trading stock options. And a year later, in 1976, the Pacific Stock Exchange, the PCX, as it was known, entered the options trading scene.
So those were the initial founding members. And you know, at the start, when the CBOE started trading options, there were only 16 different issues. Some of the names are familiar and still around today. AT&T, McDonald's, Ford, Kodak, Xerox, and some have gone by the wayside. From what we've evolved to today, and only 16 in the beginning, it's really quite amazing.
It sure is. Some interesting names you mentioned, Joe. Phil, obviously a lot happening in the early to mid-70s. How about towards the end of the 70s?
Well, Joe, in 1977, there were some technical issues that evolved. The OCC introduced exercise by exception, now known as X by X, as the administrative procedure for the convenience of clearing members who are exercising options on the expiration date. The SEC also placed a moratorium on additional listing pending a review of the industry's growth. And finally, the SEC allowed trading, if you can believe this, in put options.
What? Only puts? Only calls were trading in the early days? No puts?
For 4 years, that's correct. Yep.
That's incredible. Well, wasn't it hard to trade without puts? You know, what kind of strategies did the traders, employ or investors use from the beginning?
Well, with only calls, you still had the ability to do vertical and calendar spreads, buy rights, and covered calls.
And don't forget, some of the earlier guys figured out that you could do synthetics, like creating a synthetic put with short stock and a long call.
Wow, interesting. Talk about evolution of an industry, and we're just getting started here. Now, Joe, any sense of the daily option volume in the 70s and how many products? I mean, by 1980, let's say we're trading, we talked about 16 when we started in 73. What did we have, by 1980?
Well, in 1975, 18 million contracts traded. By 1978, the number had soared to nearly 60 million. And there were approximately 241 products by 1980. And anyone who's interested in looking at the history and the growth and the volume numbers can do so by checking out the historical statistics on the OCC website, www.theocc, that's theocc.com.
Well, that's some great growth in the first seven years, that's for sure. How about if we roll into the 80s? Now, I know the overall stock market bottomed in August of 82. Phil, did the options industry expand as the bull market got loose on Wall Street?
It sure did, Joe. In 1980, the SEC ended its options moratorium. 2 years later, the options disclosure document, which we call the characteristics and risks of standardized options, was created, and that saved a couple million dollars annually in repetitive costs for the industry. The following year, cash-settled index options began trading. In addition, the New York Stock Exchange, which is now NYSE Arca and the NYSE Amex, and the Association of Securities Dealers, NASDAQ, became participant exchanges. The 1980s also saw an explosion in the use of options, which eventually peaked with the great stock market crash in 1987. The Chicago Board Options Exchange launched its first cash-based index options in early 1980 as well. In 1983, the exchange began trading options on the S&P 100 index, known as the OEX. The OEX was the first index to have listed options. The CBOE Volatility Index, known as VIX, became the market's first real-time volatility index in 1986. VIX was based on the option prices of the OEX.
And is that still the case?
Well, you know, the VIX used to be based on the OEX, and today the VIX options are based on the SPX.
Okay, prices. That makes sense. Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought maybe that had changed.
And the SPX being the S&P 500
index. S&P 500 index.
Perfect. Now, Joe, as the leader of the OIC's investor services desk, I'm figuring you have way too many facts and figures behind that mustache of yours. Now, how about the average daily volume in the 80s and maybe the number of products by the end of the decade?
You know, that's amazing. You know, Phil mentioned that the SEC had imposed a moratorium on options and then ended it. So that they actually restricted listing of options at one time during the 80s or prior to the 80s and then released that or repealed it. The 80s saw a growing interest in both stock and index options. From 80 until 87, annual option volume rose from just under 100 million contracts to just over 300 million. And after the market crash in October 87, unfortunately, a lot of that was due to things that were just kind of out of control, like the recent market crash. People just didn't really understand some things. But the enthusiasm for all markets kind of waned a bit, and less than 200 million contracts traded in the year 1991, or roughly two-thirds of the peak levels witnessed in 1987.
So it sounds like a little bit of that cyclicality, and especially, you know, with a new business, but still some wonderful volumes by the end of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Phil, you seem to be covering the decades for us. You want to speak to the 90s a little bit?
You bet. One of the more interesting developments of the 90s was the introduction of LEAPS, long-term options. That was the creation of the CBOE, actually, I believe. And we created the Options Industry Council, the educational arm of the industry. This time period is also marked by massive strides in options volume. In 1999, the total options volume was just over 500 million, which was the first year that options exceeded that benchmark. Also, the International Securities Exchange, the ISE, was establishing its own marketplace, and it was the first one to be an all-electronic options exchange.
Wow, lots of growth, lots of innovation. Now, Joe, how about daily options volume and products traded in the 90s?
Sure. Well, by 2000, there was 2,364 equity products trading options with an average daily volume close to 2.9 million contracts per day.
Wow. You know, it's a business that's been growing all along, that's for sure. Now, going into the year 2000 and beyond, this period is filled with great strides in options volume, as you've pointed out, but of course also marred by the tragedy of 9/11. Do you have any insight that you can share about how the industry coped with the horrific events of that day?
Well, Joe, the markets all were pretty much closed for approximately 1 week until the NYSE was able to get its power and communications links back up and running. The markets did reopen on Monday, September 17th.
Yeah, that day was devastating. It was tragic. I'm sure people will never forget that day. OCC was instrumental. They took some of the exchange people into their offices. They never missed a day of processing. So anybody that was long a contract was still able to exercise it if they chose to, even during that period when the exchanges were closed.
Well, that's really amazing that was able to happen despite everything that was going on. Sadly, an unforgettable time in our history. Now, another area to delve into during the 2000-2010 period is how the personality of the trading floors changed. Phil and Joe, do you want to talk to our listeners a little bit about how that occurred and why?
Boy, it sure has changed, Joe. The trading floors still exist in some of the cities and some of the exchanges. Some have a dual model, but the methods have changed. So instead of runners with paper orders or even telephone orders going around, much of the business is now conducted electronically via handheld computers. Orders are routed from the customer through the investor's brokerage firm to the exchange, executed, and reported back to the investor, sometimes in mere seconds. Fees are lower. Times to execution on a marketable order are dropped dramatically, and many investors feel this is a huge improvement. Of course, the fact of saving money on commissions, I think, appeals to a lot of investors, and the speed with which the orders are executed is fantastic, too. Some investors still prefer the old-fashioned way, and that's still possible. It's going to be more costly for the investor, though.
And I think one of the other really important things that occurred during this decade is the electronic trading and how it emerged. As we mentioned, the ISE is the first all-electronic options exchange. It came on and it stimulated competition. The different trading crowds and the different exchanges were fighting for market share. That narrowed the bid-offer spread. There was a lowering of the fees and commissions to the retail customers. And frankly, it's a simple economics 101 issue. You narrow spreads, lower costs, volumes began to soar.
Well, really the true evolution of an industry going forward. Now, Joe, could you share with us some of the key milestones with regards to average daily volume, number of strikes maybe, products traded by the end of the decade, say 2010?
Sure. You know, in 2004, the option volume hits 1 billion contracts for the first time. Now, we at OIC like to take partial credit for that because we've helped educate the world about options.
There you go.
The risks and the benefits, you know, and as anybody who's been in the options world knows for some time, you can actually eliminate risk using options. But that number doubled from 1 billion to 2 billion in 2006 when option volume surpassed that 2 billion mark for the first time ever. And during this past decade, we also saw the addition of four more participant exchanges, including the BOX, NASDAQ Options Market, and more recently, BATS and C2 Options Exchange, which is CBOE's all-electronic exchange. There was also the emergence of ETFs and leveraged ETFs and options on both of those. And ETFs, as many investors know from listening to some of the other podcasts, are exchange-traded funds. It's like a group or a basket of underlying products that this fund owns. And it's maybe similar to some of the other mutual fund-type products, but they actually settle and trade in shares.
Well, so it has been one heck of a ride. And I think, you know, it's probably time to kind of wrap this up. I'd like to ask you both, do you see the industry continuing to grow? And if so, why?
Well, the options as a tool is incredibly versatile. It could be used in any type of market condition. We've seen spreads go from fractions, you know, quarters and eighths and sixteenths, now down to pennies. So the bid and asks are narrower. Options could be used to any market condition, bearish, bullish, neutral. We hear from both retail institutional investors every day. More and more of them are interested in the options product. I'm confident that the use of options will continue to expand in the years ahead.
Phil?
And Joe, you know, I really think that one of the things that are becoming recognized today, particularly in result of some of the difficult financial conditions we've had recently, is there is a growing acceptance and need for risk management by investors, both institutional, retail, and everyone. And that recognition of the need for risk management tools, I believe, is going to push volumes much higher in the future.
Well, I'd like to thank you both, and we can only wish that growth in the future will be as great as it has been in the past. That's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed our discussion about the history of the options industry as much as I did. If you ever have any additional questions about this subject or any options-related topic, please reach out to OIC's Investor Services by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. Check out our website at www.optionseducation.org. There's so much available on OIC's website to help you along your options journey. Also, we want to hear your comments and suggestions about how we can make the show better. So email us at options@theocc.com. Lastly, don't forget the social links we provided at the beginning of our show. So you can join us at LinkedIn, like the OIC page on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening, And remember, a little options education goes a long way.